Welcome on into the fourth and final hour of the program. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. Got football, got baseball, got a little hoops to talk in this final hour. We are rolling with you until 10 o'clock. And also want to remind you, with Atlanta United season winding down, be sure to join Jason Longshore every Tuesday night for Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Jason has you covered all season long on the latest five-stripe news, plus things that he'll keep tab on, including international soccer and the latest on the World Cup. That's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer. Tuesday nights on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and available the next day on the Off the Woodwork podcast on Odyssey. Right now, we're going to continue to cover the biggest story in the day, and that is, of course, Brian Snicker stepping down as manager of the Braves. Our boys Dukes and Bell did a good job getting the voice of the team on. Brandon Gaudin, who obviously has developed a close relationship with him over the last couple of years since becoming the voice of the team. And the first thing they asked him was not just about Snit the manager, but Snit the man.
Yeah, I mean, mixed emotions for sure on this day, because when you step into a role, whether you're a player, whether you're working in the clubhouse, whether you're doing what I'm fortunate to do every day and calling the play-by-play, when you're around this group of people all the time, you hope that the person at the top is, A, able to win, obviously, but, B, you also hope that they're a stand-up good individual. And Brian Snitker was both to the nth degree. And I think that's why when I watched the press conference earlier today and he got choked up, I got choked up. And I've only known him for 3 years, but he is as good of a person as you can come across in this business. And his wife, who has stayed kind of in the private eye, you know, you see her at games and so forth, but she's salt of the earth too. And they're just such good people. And so I'm happy for him that he gets to kind of enter into this next phase. And I know a lot of people felt like it was time. There was certainly part of me that was hoping he would get that one final year with everybody back and healthy and a chance to run at another World Series title. But I understand they're at a stage of life where they want to see their grandkids more. They want to have more time with family, and I certainly respect that. But as far as the person that Brian Snicker is, I'm just saying what you see on camera, what you see in interviews, that guy that you saw today getting teary-eyed while talking about this organization and his wife and his family, that's who he is. He's just a classy, classy individual. And the Braves are incredibly lucky to not only have called him a manager, but also obviously all the roles that he's played in this organization throughout 49 years. For them to get him for 49, and it's going to be more in this advisor role, but for him to be a lifelong Brave, that's a very special thing for both parties.
And I know, Brandon, you've been a lifelong Braves fan. We were talking about it before you got to call the games. The 21 postseason was, I mean, for lack of a better word, sublime. I can't imagine a manager hitting all the right buttons better than Snicker did that year.
Yeah, and look, you're right. I was tracking that as a fan, as close as everybody else was. It's just so interesting in sports. I was thinking about this today after watching his announcement. You go back to the 21 season, and the Braves could have very easily not even made the playoffs that year. And they go on and win it. And then you look at 2024, and the Braves are the best team in baseball. Historic offense, numbers across the board, off the charts. But they get in the postseason, and they can't win it. And I think most people would tell you that, hey, at the end of the day, World Series titles, or if you're in the NFL, hoisting that Lombardi trophy, NBA winning it all, that's ultimately what the fans want, right? And I get that. But it also is interesting how we place so much emphasis on just that postseason success and not the body of work. And I say that because, and I know you guys aren't disagreeing with this, but 9 full seasons, 6 division titles, 7 playoff trips, the World Series. I think Brian Snicker would tell you that's the Braves standard to do those things, but it's not easy. And he did it. And he did it with a lot of different players and some turmoil and a lot of injuries throughout those years. And so I think, yes, some people may have said, oh, man, we should have won that World Series in 24, et cetera, et cetera. But let me tell you, there's a lot of other fan bases that would look at Brian Snicker's body of work and say, we would take that 7 days a week and twice on Sunday.
I agree with you. Brandon Gaudin, our guest, guys, voice of our Atlanta Braves on FanDuel. And Brandon, the other part about this is the stuff we don't see. Like, we see his demeanor and how he handles guys, you know, on the field. But I've talked to enough guys behind the scenes that say, man, you know, he takes time out. He cares. And I think that goes a long way. You can have talented players, but they have to want to play for you, right? They have to want to go out and give you their best. And I think that's another thing that maybe kind of is unspoken about Snit as his you know, how he creates these relationships, and then guys feel like he cares about them. It's beyond just an at-bat, right?
It is, and I think there's no better maybe example of the impact that Brian Snitker has had on those players than what Chris Sale said after the final day of the season when he was asked about Brian Snitker's future. And I think it was Mark Bowman who said, you hope to have Snit back, and you just kind of said, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want him back, not only because he's a great manager, but he's got that clubhouse. He's our leader. Everybody in there loves him. And Chris Sale's a guy, obviously, who has had just unparalleled success as far as, yeah, he's had some injuries, and I get that. But what he has been able to do and sustain at a high level, you just don't see many pitchers in today's game that can do that for as long as he's done it and win the Cy Young last year. But he's also, Chris Sale, a leader in that clubhouse. So for him to come out so matter-of-factly, and it was just honest and brutal and just like, yes, of course I want Brian Snitker back if he wants to be here. To me, that said it all. That just kind of, he spoke for the clubhouse in that moment. Those guys understand where Snit is and are happy for him, but they were also hoping to have him back for another year. And I'll give you one little anecdote. You know, my first game in this role 3 years ago was in Washington. The Braves won 7-2 over the Nationals. And I had just briefly met Snit at spring training, getting to know each other, starting to build a relationship. He called me down to the clubhouse after that game and presented me with a lineup card.
Wow.
And it may not seem like much, but those are the moments that nobody sees. And those are the moments that he kind of was able to create for different people in the organization. And he didn't want any spotlight on it just because he cares about people and he's a people person. And that's a moment that to me is also a shining example of who Brian Snitker really is.
Old school guy, quality guy, a lifer with the organization. We're talking with Brandon Gaudin, guys, from FanDuel Sports. B, you got any insight or any feeling, your gut, about where they're going to go to replace the man? Because, you know, Walt Weiss has been the bench coach. Traditionally, the bench coach, if you're next to the man, you become the man. You think they go outside the family? You got any feel for this?
Yeah, I think certainly Walt is going to be in the discussion, and I love Walt. He's tremendous. I think it's going to be a question of, do they want to go outside for a quote-unquote fresh start? That's probably the discussion they're having right now. If they do go outside, you know, the names that we are all kind of hearing are David Ross, obviously history with the Braves here for 4 years, let go by the Cubs, but someone that is well-respected, that is seen that can be a successful manager at the big league level. We're hearing the name Skip Schumacher. I would be surprised if he's not the next manager of the Texas Rangers, with Bruce Bochy no longer in that role. And Skip Schumacher, for those who don't know, he was an advisor for the Rangers. But I'm sure a phone call will be placed in these situations. That's usually how it happens. They'll at least test the waters on both sides. You know, maybe a name that people haven't thought of, and I don't know where he stands in the Cleveland market. I know that they probably like him right now, but Stephen Vogt. Stephen Vogt is right now in the playoffs with Cleveland, so you can't make that phone call, but he has only been there 2 years. He turns 41 next month, so he's young, he's energetic, he has an incredible reputation. And look, that may not even happen as far as a phone call might not even take place, but it's an interesting name, and he does have a connection to Atlanta from a brief time here. So that's kind of an off-the-radar name I've thought of. I don't know if that'll come up in discussion. I don't have any insider information on that. But David Ross, certainly Walt, Skip Schumacher, those are all names I think that you're going to hear quite frequently here in the next couple of days, or however long it takes until they nail down this process.
Vogt was very well liked when he was here. I like that. I really do. And again, don't know if that's something they'll investigate or look at. Brandon, what about this team? While we're talking about Snit stepping away, I said to Mike, whoever it is, whomever they get to bring in and take on this job, they're inheriting a really good team, right? I mean, it's not like this is a rebuild. So when you look at the team and the ups and downs from this season, you go, all right, if everything is turned around like we think it will be next season, and, you know, health plays a role in that, this team could be right back in the hunt, regardless of who they ultimately put at the, you know, at the helm of being the manager.
And that's why this opening is so unique. Well, you guys see it like I do. We're biased. So it's a big fan base. It's a successful organization, but it's also right now an incredible roster when healthy. So, you know, if you go and you manage the Texas Rangers, even though they just won a World Series, their roster, and I don't mean any disrespect to them, but their roster is not in near as good a shape as the Atlanta Braves. Some of these other jobs that are opening across baseball, they're not necessarily all rebuilds, but if you look at them piece by piece, there's no question that the Braves job is the most appetizing opening for number of reasons. So that's what makes it interesting, because everybody is going to at least take a phone call if Alex Anthopoulos or Terry McGuirk picks up that phone, because it is the Braves and they know how good that roster is. Now we'll see how next year plays out, but I would be shocked if we are not going into spring training and looking at the Vegas odds with the Braves being top three or four as far as projected to potentially win the World Series, because that is how good this roster is when it is healthy. And I think with some of the progress we saw from some of the younger guys this year that surprised us a little bit, guys like Hurston Waldrop, I think that it makes the roster maybe even better going into next season than we originally thought. And I still think the Braves will make a move or two. I think they'll get a reliever. I think they'll get a starter for depth. I think in the field, if you get Ha-Sung Kim back, your lineup is pretty stable. But I think they're going to add a couple of pieces, because I know fans were frustrated they didn't do that last offseason. And with all of that in place, there's no question, this is a World Series contender.
Right. I know, Brandon, we've talked about this before, but I hope the team invests in that starting pitching, because, you know, you're so excited about Waldrop and getting Sale back, because, again, that was an anomaly. That was a crazy injury. That's not something about, you know, an arm issue. What are your feelings about Spencer Strider? I mean, do you feel he's going to get back on track, or is this as good as it gets, or is it still a work in progress?
No, I think it'll get better. The question will be, how much improvement does the fastball have? So is it always going to be 95, 96 for the rest of his career? What's different about the procedure that he had, and you guys have talked about this, so Tommy John and the internal brace procedure that Strider had, they're different. Internal brace procedure, you come back quicker, but there is less evidence and there's less examples of people having that, so you don't exactly know long-term how much fastball life he is going to get back. But I will say, I was really encouraged in how he was mixing in the curveball and the slider there toward the end of the season. So I think definitely, worst case scenario, he can be one of your five starters, even if he's not one of your top two or even three. He can be a very, very serviceable fourth or fifth starter with a 95, 96 mile per hour fastball and a curveball and a slider that is mixed in very well. And I think, I do think the fastball will start to come back. So I think you'll see a little more velocity next year. Give him an offseason in the lab to kind of rework his pitches. And my guess is that he'll be, I'm not going to say what he was in 23, but you give that guy time. He's as competitive as anybody. And I still think there is a very, very good career ahead for number 99.
Brandon, job well done this year. No, it's not easy when the season is sometimes a struggle, and for what you do and what everybody did in the booth, knowing all those folks over there, it's tough. And you guys did a terrific job getting us through it. And thanks for coming on today, man, on a day where a lot of Braves fans are like, huh, where are we going? But Snit was incredible. Thank you again.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
That is the great Brandon Gondin there, Braves TV voice. You hear him every single day. Got to forge the relationship with Snit. Really cool stuff there as we honor him and his Braves legacy today as he steps down as the skip, and we'll see who they get to replace him in the coming weeks and months. All right, when we get back, some college football talk with one of the best in the biz. Bill Bender joins me next. UGA, are they in trouble, or is everything cool in Athens? We'll find out next. It's Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline and talk some college ball with one of our favorites, Bill Bender, senior writer of the Sporting News. Bill, after Bama and UGA, we know about Kirby Smart's record against Alabama. I'm not concerned about that. What I am concerned about is how big, in your opinion, does this loss loom with more big games coming up for Georgia this season?
Well, I just... Not as much as you would expect. Yes, they lost the game. Yes, there were some plays that they'd probably like to have back. This is part of like the NFL-lification, that's what I call it, of college football, where you've just got to look on to the next one. I kind of fleshed out the remaining SEC schedule this week, and my takeaway is that it's probably going to take 10 wins to get the playoffs in the SEC, and as many as 5 teams could win 10 games in the SEC. So there's a long way to go.
How surprised are you that from what we saw in week one to where we are now, the rise of Alabama back to the point where they're able to beat a team like Georgia?
You know, I talked to Greg McElroy last week, and he brought up the point that, you know, it might have been the humidity, might have been the heat. And it's not an excuse, but he thinks they were a little gassed in that first game. And he has a point, because they do look like a different team. Ty Simpson playing very good football, right? He's not turning it over or anything like that. Ryan Williams looks like Ryan Williams. Their offensive line is good. Kalen DeBoer is a very good big game coach. You know, it's just the head-scratching road losses. And, you know, but all of this is short-lived in the SEC. That's another thing I think we've learned, right, that it does feel like the NFL, and that every week we're changing our mind about who the best team is. And we would change it again if Vanderbilt's able to knock off Alabama for the second straight year. Who knew that was going to be the best game of the week?
Well, right. And the thing is that you have all the other sexy intrigue of the quarterback who has been spouting his mouth off even before the season started. And I don't know if I've ever seen somebody back it up in the way that Diego Pavia has, especially considering, Bill, where he goes to school.
You know, it's got a lot, and it's popped up this week, obviously, fittingly so, that there's a little bit of Manziel there, right? Like, I was saying today, we remember Manziel beating Alabama the first time. To me, the second game was even better. Texas A&M lost, but you go back and remember, like, he's throwing to Mike Evans. I think he had, like, 500 and some total yards. A.J. McCarron was answering. It's one of the best games I remember watching and being excited to watch. So if Vanderbilt could get that win, again, it's another one of those games that kind of shakes up the entire SEC playoff picture. It's amazing to me that when you break that down, 2 weeks ago, you know, I had LSU and Georgia on top. Now you have, like, Alabama and Ole Miss and Texas A&M on top, and it just switches every week.
So we mentioned Florida State a little earlier in the chat. What do they need to do blueprint-wise to beat Miami?
Well, they better try to win up front, and that's not going to be easy. Miami has it in the trenches on both sides. Reuben Bain, Francis Malgoa. Those are first-round top five picks. Building an offensive line around those guys and defensive lines. Reuben Bain might be the best defensive player in college football. So that's number one. Castellanos has to make plays, can't turn the ball over. Carson Beck, same deal. This is a very good Miami football team, though, in the trenches. And can they go into that Doak Campbell environment? It's been a minute since we've watched Florida State at night, at home, tomahawk chop, all that stuff going on. It's going to be an interesting environment. I can't wait. It makes me feel young, like I always say, because it makes me feel like this is the closest thing in a while we've had to those great 90s games. It's not quite that, though, when you consider the number of Hall of Famers that were playing back in those games.
Yeah, we'll just call up, you know, Michael Irvin and Danny Cannell, and we'll do the whole thing all over again. Oregon, we know here because we had him in Athens. Dan Lanning is a special dude. For those who don't understand how much respect he has and how well he is commanding that program, Bill, they're brewing something special in Oregon.
He is as intense can be. He's as aggressive as can be. And I was at that game last Saturday. The way that Dante Moore handled that environment couldn't have been more impressive. Because that is in my mind, I knew you guys down there would say, like, Death Valley at night or Auburn, the whiteout is tough to play in, man. The crowd's worth a touchdown, like Dan Lanning said, but for them to go in and get that win and stay composed in double overtime, Dylan Thieneman to make a huge play, I think you guys know it, right? Like, so, begs the question, if one of these SEC programs pops open and they want a guy like Dan Lanning, how much would it take? I don't think he's leaving Oregon, though. I think he likes the setup there and the resources, and they have more than enough to be dominant in the Big Ten for a very long time.
Yeah, I think he'd go to the NFL before he went to another power college program. Honestly, I think he has that much – he's building, I should say, that much cachet. Speaking of openings, I've been racking my brain. Is there anybody to you other than – actually hanging on to Bobby Petrino, which I would be astounded if they did, that makes sense for Arkansas?
Well, I know Rhett Lashley kind of shot it down, but he's the guy, the first guy that makes sense. Former quarterback, has done a fantastic job with the Mustangs, and, you know, he's going to continue to do that. But, I mean, it begs the question, is it easier to win? Arkansas's got the better stage, no question. But you can do well at SMU. He's done well there, and they've got great recruiting base and all those things, and you can sneak in the playoff every once in a while out of the ACC. Which one's the better job? Dan Mullen's name will probably come up, you know, especially if he continues to win at UNLV. He did well at Mississippi State. Actually did well at Florida, too. So I think he's a very intriguing name as that search goes on.
Georgia Tech here. They avoided a near epic collapse against Wake Forest. They're on a bye this week. They get a pesky Virginia team after the bye. Is that another game that they should be worried about?
Yeah, I mean, and then a sneaky good game on the schedule this week is Virginia and Louisville. Louisville's a good football team. So the ACC's got plenty of hopefuls there. I think Georgia Tech, obviously, one of the best stories of September, going 5-0, the Clemson win, the win last week, where I don't know about you, but if I'm Wake, I'm kicking that extra point. I know we all say it, like hindsight of 2020, but, you know, you're at home. Why not keep that game going a little bit? But Georgia Tech is going to be favored more than likely in every game they play until they get to Georgia. And imagine the excitement you guys will have down there. I know you've talked about it, right? The possibility of 10-1 and 11-0, or 10-1 and 10-1.
Oh yeah,
that'd be amazing.
Oh yeah, it would. The only thing that could match the intensity of what happened last year, Bill, as we're talking to Bill Bender, would be that, because of the way that that game finished out a year ago. So Ole Miss, they've sort of vaulted themselves into maybe not even the darlings of the SEC, but one of the darlings of college football. Do they have the makings to potentially run the table?
This is the best team. And Trinidad Chambliss is a big piece of that. I mean, I don't want to say they lucked into that, but, I mean, the last 3 weeks to have a Ferris State transfer clear 300 passing yards, give them a running element in the offense, and they were impressive. I picked LSU to win that game last week. I don't even make fun of me about that, I guess. But, I mean, I really thought that LSU defense would limit them and Nussmeier would make a few plays. But this is a very good – and if you say they should be the highest-ranked team, and I think they're going to win the SEC championship, they've got a two-game stretch coming up in a few weeks where they play Georgia and Oklahoma. That's really it. I mean, if they get a split there, playoff.
So as we continue to look across the college football landscape, a couple of questions at this juncture in the season as we start to sort of separate who are the legit contenders and pretenders, at least for a shot at getting into the college football playoff and having a shot at the whole thing. A team that really sticks out to me a lot right now is Texas Tech, not just because they spent all the money, but because of the way that they've been 4-0, and I like the momentum that they're gaining. I just don't have the resume behind them, Bill. That's my issue, to trust that what I'm seeing right now through 4 weeks is real. How do you feel?
Well, I thought it was pretty real how they went to Utah and took care of business with their – I'm most impressed with their defense. You know, they're up front, their front seven, paid for or not. Rodriguez is a fantastic linebacker. They're good up front, and I think that's going to be a difference maker. Can they withstand the craziness that comes with being in the Big 12? That's what we'll find out. You know, I think they can, and they're very exciting. And you mentioned NIL, but look who's in the – top 12-ish, you know, top 12, and if we did playoff rankings, they'd all be in the field. That Texas A&M, Texas Tech, they'd all be in the playoff right now. So, yeah, well, money matters a little bit, and those guys have it, and it's showing on the field.
Yeah, I guess the only question was going into it is, can money buy the necessary cohesion, right? Mm-hmm. Can you just bring a bunch of high-priced players together, put them on the field, and say, make this thing happen? But so far, so good.
Well, I think you have to have a mix, right? Like, if you're Georgia or Ohio State or Alabama, you have some built-in advantages where you're going to recruit the top players, and it's about development and getting to the league and those things. And you know, if you did to me, it's like it's risky if you did that strategy every year where you just brought in 40 transfers, because imagine an NFL team bringing in 50 new guys every year. Eventually, they're not going to be very good. So I think there are some checks and balances to that. But in the short term, like I always compare this to baseball. Like if there's a mid-market team in the playoffs right now that pops in, I mean, you're not going to hear their fans. Like I'm in Ohio. If the Reds knock off the Dodgers the next two nights, there's not a person around here that's going to complain about what their roster looks like.
Right, or their payroll is literally a third right. of the Dodgers, which is crazy to think about. Before I let you go, you obviously watched every snap of Shedeur Sanders in college. Does what he's doing now in Cleveland, now getting into antics with the media, does that surprise you? Did you think he had maturity issues, or is this par for the course?
I always liked Shedeur the player. I thought he was so tough in Colorado. I thought, you know, he took a lot of hits. He elevated that program. They were a couple games away from winning the Big 12. So today is, I got to admit, is bizarre. Seeing that clip of him doing the mime thing and, you know, his frustration with Dylan Gabriel. I mean, at the end of the day, man, I've followed the Browns forever. He's going to get a chance to start at some point this year if the Browns quarterback track record means anything. So why not just do – that's like take the layup, right? Just say, hey, yeah, I hope Dylan does great. I'm here for him. We're going to help any way we can. Instead, it becomes a story that you and I are going to talk about.
Right, and that's exactly the problem. And my whole point is you're just giving people who don't like you all the necessary fodder in the world to, A, continue to not like you, and then, B, point a giant finger and say, see, this is why you're not starting in the NFL, because this is what you do, and you don't represent the organization the right way. So I agree with you. It's just an interesting tactic, to say the least.
So easy, and so easy to avoid. And I like Shedeur. I like how he played. I've always liked his touchdown to interception ratio. I like how he throws the ball down the field. He's a tough kid. And, you know, the pressure of being Deion's son, I understand all that. But you're just adding to something unnecessary. It's an unnecessary story, and these guys should know better.
Absolutely, 100%. All right, my friend, we will talk to you soon. We'll check you out in the sporting news. Make sure you check out Bill Bender's work there, one of the best in the biz. Appreciate you as always.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me on.
All right.
Take care.
Great stuff there from Bill Bender, breaking down all things college football. Not worried about the dogs. Warren, I'm a little worried about the dogs. Just saying. A couple of teams left on the schedule that are making me sweat a little bit. Can the offense click? Can the defensive secondary stop giving up bombolas? Not really sure. We'll figure it out. All right, to close up shop, we'll hear from the man of the day, the man of the hour. That, of course, is Brian Snicker. He held a press conference today. We'll give you all the best highlights and sound from that as we remember Snit's time as the Braves manager, World Series winner, one of the best to do it. Hanging him up today on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Want to remind you, with the Falcons off this Sunday, we have an NFL triple header coming up on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It all starts at 9:15 on Sunday with the Vikings taking on the Browns in London. After that, it's the Cowboys at the Jets, followed by the Lions at Bengals. It's all brought to you by Window Nation. Visit windownation.com. Three big NFL games all day this Sunday on 92.9 The Game. Of course, we're talking about Brian Snicker stepping down as manager of the Braves. That has been the story of the day, so that's where we will finish, as Snit did hold a press conference today at Truist Park. And the first thing he said was 3 years ago when he signed his last contract, well, he knew that was going to be his last contract.
You know, 3 years ago, I signed the extension. And this, you know, when I signed it, this was to be my last year, and I was kind of excited about it because I thought, well, you know, it's going to put a reality to it, and I was really good with it. I was very appreciative that, you know, I honestly never thought I'd manage one day in the major leagues, let alone 10 years.
And that's a testament to his story. 50 years, Oren, in the organization. It's unbelievable. One of the great stories of all time from a lifer minor leaguer to World Series winning manager. I mean, you can't write a better story than that. So much so that when Snit started talking about the organization, he got a little choked up.
I never thought I'd hoist a trophy or be around a group of guys that that makes this so special. Because, you know, it's about the players. And we've been fortunate here to have probably the greatest group of players, coaches, the whole building is, and I said this after we won the World, it literally takes a whole building to do something special. And I've been blessed to be around great people within the Atlanta Braves organization.
Yeah, and he'll have that for the rest of his life. That World Series championship, no one will ever forget it. He'll be honored through time and memorial as one of the best Braves managers of all time, but it was just time. You could just feel it. Oren and I talked about it earlier in the show. You just need a new energy in there. This team went through a really tough year, and it's going to be up to them and Alex Anthopoulos to lead the way and get them back to being a World Series contending team, which is what we talked about today. By the way, the poll is up at C. Thomas Radio. Let's take a look right now. Are the Braves back to a World Series contender next season was the poll, yes or no? Oren, ye of little faith in Braves country. No, 55% to yes, 45%.
And not having it.
No. And I get it. I mean, I get the skepticism. It was a tough year, but the pieces are still there. Again, the phrase I used earlier in the show was the Braves just need some spackling. They don't need a brand new house. They don't need new foundation. They don't need a new swimming pool. Everything is there. They just need to spackle. They need to add another quality arm in the rotation, probably two in the bullpen. If Kim comes back, there's a shortstop in the future, and we'll see what they do with Ozzie Albies. But other than that, everything else is there. Your regular everyday lineup is essentially returning, y'all. At least, you know, eight pieces of it for sure if Kim comes back. And then it'll just be up to what they decide to do with Ozzie Albies. Snicker says he is excited for his new role, but it was definitely a tough choice.
I'm excited to continue to be a part. And I saw a couple of them the other day, and it's like, you're not getting rid of me. You know, I'm still going to be here. I'm going to be in spring training. I'm excited about this new role. Until like the last 3 weeks of this season, I know you can ask the coaches, I talked about, you know, this being my last year, you know, but when you're sitting in this seat, you're in the heat of the battle. I don't know, you know, and I said after I'm going to need a little time after that last out to really decide what I want to do.
Yeah, and that obviously, Oren, that gets made harder when your team goes off on a 10-game winning streak to essentially end the season. So understand Snit and his decision-making there. And he added to that by saying every day he was just focused on that day's game, which made big-picture decisions that much harder.
I said, you know, the job's not hard to leave. Like I always told the players, it's like you're never guaranteed tomorrow, so the most important day you have is today, and you do everything you can, and you suck the life out, and you win today's game, and then worry about tomorrow. And, you know, I think, but after sitting around a little, those few days, and kind of reflecting and all, you know what, it is. I'm ready for this next challenge and the next stage of my career, and I'm grateful for the Terry and the Braves for allowing that to happen here.
Yeah, and it's going to be a difference, and it's going to be something new for him. But at the end of the day, he decided that's what he wants to do. You know, 70 years old, focus on the family and contribute when he wants to the Braves and still be a part of the organization. I think it worked out well for both sides. I don't think anybody ever questioned that. It was just there was a lot of things that slipped through the cracks this season, if we're being honest, in terms of mistakes on the field, in terms of you know, having all your T's crossed and your I's dotted. There was just a lot of things, dugout issues, issues with Ronald Acuna, but all those things are behind us now, and we just remember Snit for everything he did. He also went on to, of course, thank the players.
I'm blessed to have been with some of the greatest guys in the world for 10 years. And I've saw, you know, some of you guys, I've saw every pitch, every play, every at bat that you've had in the major leagues. And for that, I love it because you guys are the greatest there is. And, but it's going to be, I say, I'm excited for this new chapter in my life, because I think at some point in time, everybody has to have that. So I'm blessed that I can do it here in a place where I was born and raised with this organization.
You could hear it in his voice how tough that decision was for him to make. You know, it's something that I'm sure once you hit that pinnacle of your career, you never want to give it up. Oren, I'm going to be completely honest. That's why it's so damn hard to get a job in this industry. Because if you get to a point where you are working in the sports media, sports radio, sports TV industry, you're one of a very few. There's not a lot of these jobs out there, and they're only shrinking. So if you get a position like this, that's why you see talk show hosts and TV show hosts work into their 60s and 70s. A lot of them don't have to. A lot of them do it because they genuinely love it, and they know how few of those opportunities there are in the world. Last one from Snit. He says the hardest part for him is going to be leaving the people.
I said, you know, the job's not hard to leave. The relationships and experiences and all that's what's tough. You know, not seeing guys every day and working relationships. And we got an unbelievable team here that we work with, from, you know, we got the greatest trainers, strength coaches, video guys that I nuzzle up to all the time. They're kind of my sounding boards. You know, it's everybody, the clubhouse kids, the clubhouse staff, the media. I mean, thank the media. I thank you guys. I mean, I know it's not an easy job. Me sitting here, you sitting over there. You got to do. You guys have been great, and I appreciate everything that you did for me, and how you handled things and the tough times. But you guys were all great, and I appreciate everything you've done for me.
You think Grant McCauley was getting a little choked up after that? Oh, getting the shout out from Snit like that. I appreciate the media so much. That was nice of him. See that, but that's Snit, class act all the way through and through. A guy that everybody in Major League Baseball loves, and one of those guys. Oren, it's tough to say the following phrase in the world: a guy that everybody has nice things to say about. It just doesn't happen very often in this world, especially in a competitive environment like sports. But Snit's a guy that everybody who's ever had an interaction with him was like, oh, he's like the nicest guy in the world. Not a bad thing to say about him. My own just 2 cents here, it was thrust upon me, and I had no idea until very quickly before, and that might have been done intentionally, so I didn't get too nervous about it. Early on, in my days filling in here as a host on 92.9 The Game, I filled in for Andy Bunker. You know who was a guest on that show that day, Oren?
Brian Snitker, if I remember correctly, yes.
Brian Snitker. I'm sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, I'm about to ruin the station's relationship with Brian Snitker by making a fool out of myself.
You held your own that day, buddy.
And he couldn't have been nicer. Brian Snitker knows who Randy McMichael is. There is a 0.0000% shot he knew who I was. He did not care. He answered all of my questions. He answered every question as if it was Randy asking it. And he couldn't have been nicer. And he had such a patient tone. And he made me feel calm. He made me feel like I was just talking to another person. And it certainly was not. In my young hosting career, it was the freaking manager of the Braves, Brian Snitker. Here I am. I'm like, I'm going to get the co-host for Randy McMichael today. Here you go, Turtle. Interview Snit. No big deal. I was like, okay. So that was my only personal experience with him, and he couldn't have been better. And that's how I'll always remember him as the manager of the Atlanta Braves. So appreciate you, Snit. Shout out. Hope you enjoyed your day. Hope you enjoyed your moment. You're going into the Hall of Fame. Rightfully so. One of the best managers to ever do it for the Atlanta Braves. Appreciate all the callers. Appreciate all the guests. Everybody who tweeted at me at C Thomas Radio. We'll be back tomorrow for the Shorty Show Thursday. That means Orin and I are making our picks. Things are getting spicy. After both of us had a solid week last week, we'll talk to you tomorrow on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.